This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. We originate today's program from the Farm Bureau Federation 97th Annual Convention in New Orleans, 555 Canal Street at the Marriott, where the Farm Bureau has met for many years. And as usual, our guest to begin our program when we do this is Commissioner of Agriculture Mike Strain. And a reminder that signature sponsorship for Talk Louisiana comes from Brian Lowe Financial. Your number, as always, is 877-217-5757, and you can send us an email, talk@talklouisiana.org. And before we get down to business of agriculture, Commissioner Strain, you know this town pretty well. You graduated from Covington High School.
Yes. It's good to be here this morning.
Long time ago.
Now it's a long time ago. It didn't seem like it at the time, but I can tell you, time has moved just instantly. You know, the great thing, I graduated from Covington High and went straight to LSU, and I was an undergraduate from 76 to 79, and then started in veterinary school and finished in 83, went right back home to start a rural practice and practiced there until I really went in the legislature. That was in 1999.
20 years ago.
That's hard to believe. I mean, I can still remember the first day I walked into that Capitol. Don Caju and I had at lunch with then Speaker Downer, and so that in a big bowl of gumbo, and that's where we started. And I can tell you, it feels like it was yesterday. It's just been an incredible adventure. 8 years in the House, and then of course I ran statewide, and have been now Commissioner of Agriculture since 2008.
That's right. Seeking a fourth term is Mike Strain, but 20 years ago he got the political bug at 40. Obviously comes from a political family, and he ran and won successfully a House seat in 1999. Mike Foster was the governor of Louisiana. So you've worked with Foster, Blanco, Jindal, and Governor
John Bel Edwards, yes.
How do you compare them?
Well, each is different in a different way. You know, Mike Foster, he and I, we got along extremely well together, and, you know, when he put his mind to something, it was going to happen. We always said, you know, if there was a problem, you saw him put on that ball cap, right? Or head to the duck blind for a few hours. When he came back, you know, he was chopping wood. And he and I got along very, very well together, worked very well together. And then, of course, I served under Governor Blanco, and, you know, and she is a wonderful person. And she has the biggest heart of anyone I've ever known. And of course, I work well. And as a legislator, I actually had carried some bills for her when she was lieutenant governor. And then Bobby Jindal came in, and, of course, it was a very different mindset and philosophy. But we always got along well together. If you remember when we had the crisis when Pilgrim's Pride pulled out of Farmerville, and I went up there immediately, and I'm standing there looking at 300 families, and they're shutting down the processing facilities. We had more than 300 farms that owed banks. They owed banks almost $500 million. Mm-hmm. dollars. And that was a disaster. So we met with the governor, and we came back a week later with basically $50 million in tow. And I remember when he got up and gave his speech, he said, "We are going to commit $50 million of funding to reopen a poultry plant. We're going to have incentives. We're going to make this happen." And I leaned over. I said, "Governor, we don't have $50 million in that account." I already checked. He said, "Well, the commissioner and I are committing $50 million to that account." And so that was very, very interesting. But you know, we always work well together. And, of course, when there was the great floods and the hurricanes, you know, he dispatched me and, of course, Paul Rainwater to Washington, D.C. And we stayed, and actually Senator Landrieu gave us office space for almost a month before we came home. And we were able to secure $900 million for all the southern states. And then, of course, with Governor John Bel Edwards, John Bel actually represented part of my old legislative district. Mm-hmm. And I knew his family well before I knew him. I, you know, served with his brother, who was sheriff, and I knew the family, because that was all part of my legislative district. And John Bel and I, when he was a legislator, we worked very well together. But actually, we would debate each other. In a previous presidential election at LSU, he would represent Barack Obama, and I would represent Mitt Romney. And we were there at the law school debating presidential debates, he and I as proxies. And we've debated each other several times and really enjoyed it. And since he's been governor, he made a commitment to agriculture. And as you know, for the first time since the days of Earl Long and Harry D. Wilson, the Commissioner of Agriculture and the governor traveled the state and opened meetings. And, you know, we would pack the rooms. They would clean out their tractor sheds. And, you know, and we'd have a little bit of barbecue or a little bit of you know, jambalaya or something. And but we would sit and we would stay until the last question was addressed. And I think we did six of those over the course of a year across the state. And we worked well together on many, many, many projects. And you're going to hear from the governor today. But that being said, I also worked very well with Ralph Abraham and our congressional people. And because, you know, agriculture, I don't have to be political as in other offices. We have to work with both sides, and irregardless of whether who is in the presidency or who's in the governorship, agriculture continues because everybody's got to eat. And I've been very proud of being able to work on both sides of the aisle with different governors and, you know, different leaders in Washington. Mm-hmm. And I've had a whole lot of fun. I can tell you, you know, this is a heck of a thing for a farm boy from Abita Springs, Louisiana, to be a constitutional officer of the state and be able to serve as Commissioner of Agriculture. And then one of my greatest honors is when I was elected by my peers to head the nation's Ag Commissioners, head of the National Association of State Department of Agriculture. And, of course, where did we bring the meeting? We brought it right here to New Orleans. And it was the greatest, well, the biggest attended, the most attended convention, you know, a meeting of all the commissioners. And so we were here. And, you know, I was coming in the parking lot, and the guy said, boss, what's going on? So what do you mean? He said, we've got FBI people, Secret Service from many different countries. I said, yeah, all my rowdy friends are coming to town. And so it was a great experience.
What about marijuana? Where do we stand right now? Louisiana's embarking on a brave new adventure, and there's some kinks.
Well, right now what we're dealing with is that we have two different companies that are subcontractors of the universities. Only place in the United States where the government is in the production of medical marijuana. And so everything has to follow all the government rules, procurement rules, et cetera, et cetera. And so where we're at now, we are getting very close with GB Science, the GBSL, which is from LSU. They are in the process of making a final product. We are waiting on a final product. They've done two harvests of, you know, because you have to grow the plant from a tissue culture, then you have to grow it, then you have to harvest it, dry it, process it, which takes several steps. You have to dry it, then process it. Then they have to take that and make a medication out of it. And so they are making the process. We're waiting on the final medication. Then I have to test that medication to make sure the first bottle and the 50th bottle all have the same thing in it, right? Make sure it's homogeneous. And also make sure it doesn't have any bacterial or fungal contamination. Now, that'll probably take a week once I get it. So we're waiting on that. Southern, and that's through ILIRA. And if you recall, there were some issues there. The first contractor, subcontractor for Southern, that didn't work out with them. And then we have a second subcontractor. So they are in the process now of starting their first grow. They're getting very, very close. They have their facilities, and they're going to be doing it a little bit differently. And I can't tell you how each one's doing it because that's what we call proprietary information. But Southern is coming online, and so we hope to have them probably late in the fourth quarter of this year. But we're hoping to have some product from LSU and GBSL very, very, very soon. So we're waiting on that product, and so because they have to take and manufacture. And so, you know, when most people think about marijuana, they think about smoking the buds. That's not the case here. They have to take the marijuana and extract the CBDs and the THC, those components, separate those out, and then make a pharmaceutical product. And so, and we're doing this, and we're not, if it was done under the FDA, that would take 7 to 10 years. And then there would be several years of clinical testing, et cetera. So we're trying to expedite this. So we're getting very close, and we hope to have something soon that we can go ahead and clear to go straight to the consumer. And the reason it's got to be tested so very thoroughly, because it's going straight from the production facility to a consumer.
Well, 10 states, I believe, are now in the recreational marijuana business, and Louisiana is not. The governor has stated his opposition to it. Do you ever see a day when we go that direction?
I think what you may see with 10 states with recreational marijuana, we have more than 35, maybe close to 40 states with medicinal marijuana, and they're all different rules and regulations. Canada is recreational. Mexico may do that soon. And so I think what you will probably have something across the United States where they remove marijuana from the Controlled Substance Act federally. And then if that happens, it would be up to each individual state to decide. It's still, even though there's 10 legal states for recreational marijuana, it's legal under state law, but it's a violation of federal law, and it's in Schedule 1, which means experimental, no medical use. And so it is it's a felony under federal law, even though in the individual states, the state law doesn't prohibit it, but state law doesn't supersede federal law. And so I think you're going to see a change. I think this probably will become an issue in the federal elections, the 2020 federal elections. And I really think what's going to happen, the federal government's going to say, okay, we're going to let each state decide, because you can't have a different set of laws when between the state and the federal government. Whatever the law is needs to be the same.
877-217-5757 is your number. We'll go to the phone lines with Commissioner Mike Strain after this brief pause on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Again, your number is 877-217-5757. Same phone number, same email, talk@talklouisiana.org. Even though we are broadcasting from the Farm Bureau Federation 97th Annual Convention in the great city of New Orleans, and a bit more time with Commissioner of Agriculture Mike Strain. Dan downtown. Dan, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Yeah, good morning, Secretary Strain.
Good morning.
Has Sonny Perdue's efforts to suppress the research and retaliate against the U.S. Ag Department's researchers by moving them to Kansas City adversely affected Louisiana farmers?
I don't think so. I think what's really going on by moving the ERS and probably an APHIS to Kansas City and to other areas, they're moving out of Washington, D.C., and they're moving into the heartland. If you remember, a number of years ago, they moved the research facility for foreign animal diseases into the heartland of America and away from Plum Island, which was in New York. So they're moving these entities into the center or the heartland of America, getting rid of the concentration that is in Washington, D.C. The cost of living is very, very high in Washington, D.C., and I think there are a number of reasons, and I would think the fact that these facilities and that and like Plum Island were on the coast, I think there's more to it than just, it's not a whim to move them. There's specific national security concessions and reasons to do that. I do not think it's going to harm anything. We will probably have some people that will not make the move. But by and large, I think you're going to see probably in the next 10 years growth in the amount of research and really a lot of positive things eventually coming from this, as that area and those particular regions now become a new super hub where we're combining a number of, you know, different things from research and other things into a central area that is able to grow. You know, if you've spent any time in Washington, D.C., it's very expensive. Getting around is difficult, and I think there are a number of logistical reasons why this is being done.
877-217-5757 is your number. Dale in New Iberia. Dale, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana. Hi, Dale.
Hi. I was calling to see why the government is in the production of the marijuana. I can understand it for the beginning, but I know our farmers could make more money if they were allowed to produce CBD oil and related things like that, but they're being locked out by the Louisiana government being involved in production, which I think is not fair.
Okay, so when you talk, we have to split that question, because medical marijuana is THC and any CBDs from the marijuana plant, which is high THC cannabis. We've passed a hemp bill that was passed in this last legislative session that was signed into law about 3 weeks ago, and that will allow for production of hemp and then CBDs from hemp as well as fiber, and that will be done under the provisions of the 2018 Farm Bill. And so the legislature passed that. We worked on that for a number of months, getting all of this together, and went through the legislative session. But hemp production and the processing will be open to all citizens of Louisiana. There's some specific federal requirements as far as like background checks, but the government is not in the hemp business. It is going to be for the citizens, and we're not going to have any restrictions where someone can or cannot grow. And so, you know, if you look at, we expect initially between 200 to 500 people will start, and it could grow to 1,000 farms.
Randy and Zachary. Randy, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Commissioner Mike Strain.
Yes, good morning, Commissioner.
Good morning.
Like to know, are there anybody in Ruston left that grows peaches?
Well, the problem with the peaches is that we have, I think it's a sudden oak death. It's a disease that we have not been able to treat because the federal government will not let us infuse, methyl bromide to treat the peaches and kill that particular disease. And so either one, we have got to get something where the federal government will allow us to do it, and they're being very difficult about it, or we're going to have to develop through our ag centers a variety of peaches that is not subject to that oak disease. So there are people still growing them, but the problem is that we have got a disease that we have been fighting, and we have our hands tied as far as the methodology to deal with that and to control it.
877-217-5757 is your number in our remaining time with Commissioner Mike Strain, and in just a bit we'll hear from the head of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, Ronnie Anderson. What about tariffs? How are they affecting Louisiana farmers?
Well, if you look at the value, for instance, if you look at the value of beef, 40% of the value of beef is in foreign trade. If you look at soybeans, 6 out of 10 acres is sold to one customer or was to China. So we've had some pretty good hits as far as tariffs. Soybeans, the effect of the tariffs was about $1.65 per bushel. For corn, it was less because we use most of our corn. It was about a penny, but it did go into beef, into poultry. Now, that being said, day before yesterday, Mexico ratified the USMCA agreement. We're waiting on the United States and Canada, and that will lift all of those retaliatory tariffs and bring down the tariffs. Our number one trading partner agriculturally is Canada. Number two is Mexico, and China's always been number three. Now, China is coming around, and why? Because China's getting hungry. For the last 2 years in a row, worldwide, we have consumed more rice than we have produced for 2 years in a row. Worldwide, last year, we consumed more wheat than we produced, and 2 years ago, we consumed more cotton than we produced. So by and large, when you're talking about wheat, corn, rice, and cotton, the world production is not keeping up with world consumption. China's got to get back in because we've made a concerted effort to market our products across the world, every market we can get into. Mm-hmm. And China knows either you come to the table or you won't be at the dinner table. And so I think you're going to see these tariffs. I think this situation is going to resolve. You're already seeing positive motion. A lot of farmers last week were trying to go ahead and book their corn crops and their beans because we had a very positive uptick in the last few days, actually, this week, in corn and beans. And so I think we're going to see a positive motion on all that, and we are working diligently on that.
All right. Silas Bogue asks about the regulatory structure for the marijuana manufacturing, asking if it could have been done better.
Sure. Looking back in hindsight, when the legislature passed this in 2015, I think the initial discussion was that it would have been to two private entities, and that we would just oversee and regulate through normal governmental methodologies, two different entities. Then at the end stage of the game, two things happened. One, they asked me if I would oversee it. I said, I'll do whatever you ask me to do. And then secondly, they said, okay, well, we want to help our ag centers, so we're going to have the ag centers, the government, go into the marijuana business. And so if we had to do it all over again, I would say that either the ag centers do it independently, right, and have let them oversee it, or that it goes straight into private hands, just like any other drug manufacturing. So the way it was done was the only way it would have passed the legislature. And you can see every year we are amending that legislation. So what it started off looking like and what it looks like today is a little bit different, but there's layers. And if you look at the hemp legislation, we have layers there too.
All right, Delia Batliner asks, what impact will climate change have on Louisiana farmers?
I think climate change is something we must really pay attention to. For instance, this year, the Mississippi River has been the highest for the longest period of time in recorded history. This year in America, we've had more rainfall than in recorded history. We've got more water in the Mississippi River than from the flood of 27. And the only reason we didn't have to pull the pins and open the Morganza is because the Arkansas broke through 400 feet of the Arkansas levee and that river broke through, which happened and also in the flood of 27. So I think we're seeing more water. We recognize that. We're seeing storms that tend to be more violent. We are very concerned about the effects of climate change. We're also looking at, you know, why our coasts are, quote, sinking, but also getting a better understanding why the seas are rising. We're getting an understanding of that. So we have to be cognizant of that, and we need to look forward how we're going to deal with that. Now, the debate on what is causing climate change, what is causing the coast to sink, what is causing the seas to rise, we can debate that quite extensively. But agriculture is the solution, right? We take in the CO2. We produce oxygen. But we need to be very cognizant of it.
Commissioner Strain, thank you so much. Always a pleasure.
Thank you.
Do it again soon.
Thank you.
And we'll return with Ronnie Anderson, the president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. Your number 877-217-5757. Now this pause for the news on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, broadcasting from the 97th Annual Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation Convention in New Orleans. And this convention started back in the year of 1921. Warren Harding was president of the United States. John M. Parker was governor of Louisiana. That's a name that Ronnie Anderson, our guest, knows well. He's also a member of the LSU Board of Supervisors. And John M. Parker is the name on the Coliseum where, when you were a student, you used to watch Pete Maravich play, right?
I did. Pete and I were freshmen at the same time, and we'd go to the freshman games. At that time, freshmen could not play on the varsity team, and they played in the Coliseum there. And so we'd go, and the place would be packed, and they'd watch Pete. Everybody would watch Pete. And then the varsity would start to play, and everybody would leave, and there wouldn't be anybody left. It was interesting. And I graduated there. They covered the floor with, materials that would keep us from sinking into the dirt. And that's where I got my degree, is in the Parker Coliseum.
Just 49 years ago. But
few years back.
But 30 years as head of the Farm Bureau Federation. Each year you meet here, and this year is particularly interesting because you had your national event here as well.
Right. We were fortunate this year. American Farm Bureau goes out 5 years in selecting a site. So a little over almost 6 years now, we decided, and I convinced the American Board, that New Orleans was the ideal place to have the centennial celebration. And the president came, and it turned out to be a really good event. We had a lot of interesting speakers and issues and stuff that we dealt with, but it shows the interest that the national media and the government has in what Farm Bureau is doing.
877-217-5757 is your number, and Jim in Denham Springs has been waiting for a while. Jim, are you still there? You're on the air with Ronnie Anderson, the president.
I am still here.
Okay, go for it, Jim.
Well, I'm really curious about what's going on with our new labeling stuff that we're doing for rice and milk, because I don't think anybody is really confused that riced vegetables, ricing is a method of cutting, that we're not confusing them with actual rice, and that things like almond milk and soy milk, no one thinks that they might come from a cow or a sheep or a goat or a camel. They're looking for alternatives, and all we end up doing is showing the rest of the country and the world that Louisiana is really not all that bright.
I have to disagree with you on that issue, but I've seen labels placed on commodities like that in the grocery stores that really do not deceive or try to convince the consumers that something that's not meat is meat, and something that's not milk is milk. And we have no problems with people that want to use that kind of product and all the stuff that's out there if they think for health reasons it's better. But why confuse the issue and call it something that it's not?
Thank you, Jim. 877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org for President Ronnie Anderson of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, also an LSU board member. Here's a question from Tracy at the Capitol asking, who pays for it when the president comes for an event like he did in New Orleans for your national convention?
That's pretty interesting. We pay for it. The
you
Farm
pay
Bureau
for it.
Pays for it. It cost us a little bit over $100,000, the American Farm Bureau, 2 years in a row that he attended, to cover the additional cost of security, fencing, metal detectors, and I think we even pay for the fuel in the plane.
And you're on the board of the American Farm Bureau as well.
Right.
Right. Now, what's the state of the state for farmers in Louisiana right now?
Well, we just finished the legislative session, and we fared pretty well. We normally what Farm Bureau does, we're more into killing bills than passing bills, and there was a lot of stuff in there that would have given us some grief. We had a good session. We got through that. We didn't get tort reform that we wanted to have that would have helped alleviate some of the problems that we have with lawsuits against not only passenger cars and truckers and moving our products and all of that, but we want to be fair, but it's getting out of hand with some of the judgments that are given there. But as far as agriculture goes, if we can get the prices up, if the trade agreements will be settled, we're off to a slow start with all the wet conditions that we dealt with, and it could turn out to be a really good year. Last year at this time, it was going really great in weather, and prices deteriorated. We're hoping it's going to turn and go the other direction this time.
All right. Grant in Ponchatoula asks, get Grant's question again. It's regarding the expenses for the Farm Bureau, and of course, you're a nonprofit on one side and I think a for-profit on the other side, or is that mistaken? But his question is, if you become a policy holder for the insurance, are you automatically a member of the Farm Bureau?
No, you have to be a member of the Farm Bureau before
you
become
so it's the other way around. Yeah.
It's just the opposite way. We have the mutual company, which is owned by the policy holders themselves. That's a property company in state, a single state entity. The casualty company is a six state entity. It's a stock company, and we are one of six stockholders that own the casualty company. And the life company is housed in Jackson, Mississippi with the casualty company. It's a 10-state entity, and we're one of the 10 states that own the stock in the life company.
So technically, are you a full nonprofit?
The Federation is nonprofit. The insurance companies are for profit.
Okay. Got it right the first time. 877-217-5757. But 137,000 members in the state of Louisiana. And people may not realize it, but farming is still the number one industry in our state. And we probably have a higher percentage of people in the state who are members of the Farm Bureau than in other states. Is that accurate?
We do. We've got a high percentage of our population. And you take a number, say 136, 140, 150,000 members. You can multiply that by four or five, because when a household, a family is a member, then all the children are in that household under the age of 19, 20. They're a member also. So you can look at that number, and we have a method of being able to communicate and contact those people. So that's why there's a lot of interest in politicians to come to Farm Bureau meetings. We vote, we support, we have a network of getting out there and their information that they might be interested in getting to the voters, no matter what kind of race they're in, which office they're running for. But that's the way we operate.
877-217-5757. And another listener noted that politicians, obviously, they like to come here, especially in an election year. And things were a little feisty 4 years ago when we had four candidates for governor on the same stage. But this time, you're doing it a bit differently. How are you showcasing the candidates?
Well, in the governor's race, when we have an incumbent governor, we do not have a forum like we did 4 years ago. So the governor is coming, and he's going to give a presentation, and it won't be a, you know, we will not ask questions and banter back and forth with with that. We've got the governor, the lieutenant governor, the commissioner of agriculture, the insurance commissioners coming. Then we have several senators and several congressmen that are coming. One of the congressmen is Garrett Graves. He's going to be here later on Friday afternoon. And Ralph Abraham, who is a congressman that sits on the House Ag Committee. And he is very important to us in Washington because he handles and works with the issues that we have related to agriculture that are in Congress. And he's going to be speaking, I think, Sunday morning. But we've got a whole group of them coming in.
Of course, Abraham is running for governor.
I failed to mention that.
Mike in Lafayette. Mike, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with
How you doing?
Ronnie Anderson. Hi, Mike.
Yes, am I on the air?
Yes, you are.
Yeah, I'd like to ask two questions of your guests. The first question is does the Farm Federation support the separation of children from their parents at the border in support of President Trump's policies?
We have people all over the place on that. Our membership is very diverse. We do, in general, support conservative approaches to financing and trade and all of that sort of stuff. But it would be a mixed bag in our organization if you started to look at some of Trump's policies. And if you go back, and I'm not an expert on all of that, but I think the Obama administration started separating children from people that either are or pretend to be parents at the border. So it's a long time history of doing that. It's just so many making headlines.
And of course, the current administration has taken this to a new level and has made it a major issue. Does that distract from other issues?
Well, I think it does, to a point. But we've got to do something to secure the border. You cannot allow anyone coming into the country without some sort of verification of who they are, what they're coming, where they're coming from, where they're going to be, and all of that sort of stuff. It does cause a distraction, but then, too, we've got so many other issues that we're dealing with, so any distraction is not really good.
877-217-5757. We'll spend some more time with Ronnie Anderson. 30 years. That's the 80s, 90s, the O's, the 1s, and on his way to the 2s. We'll talk with him some more after this brief pause on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. And our guest for the remainder of the hour is Ronnie Anderson, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. We are broadcasting from the Farm Bureau Federation's 97th annual convention downtown New Orleans at the Marriott on Canal Street. And Ronnie Anderson's been here many times, and several thousand of his closest friends have joined him. It's a major event for the agriculture industry every year. And, of course, there are some challenges. And we had a question earlier for Commissioner Strain about tariffs. And there's another one from Joanne in Capitol Heights asking about tariffs and how they have affected farmers in Louisiana. What's your take on this?
Well, the immediate effect of some of the tariffs that were put on as prices were lowered, our ability to supply other countries with product drove the price down. Hopefully, there'll be trade agreements done quickly that will open up new avenues and open up old avenues of trade that we've had for years. And you know, what's really disappointing when you look at all these issues for years back, when there was a political issue going on between countries, farmers are usually the first to take the brunt of an embargo or a tariff or anything like that's put on, and it does impact us, and we have a really difficult time of working through and surviving those kinds of situations.
Ronnie Anderson's seen a lot of governors and presidents come and go. In 1989, I guess when you took over, Reagan was just leaving office, right? So you've been through a few, and the governor of Louisiana at that time was Charles Elson Buddy Romer. You've seen a few governors come and go.
Yes, a whole group of governors. And I've been on the executive committee for 4 years and on the board 4 years before that, so add eight to that. And we had a lot of dealings with Edwin Edwards, and he was a very interesting, still is a very interesting character. And I've been called to the governor's mansion to talk about issues and with all the different governors. And it's they're all different, and they all got different ideas, and we've been able to, as an organization, to work pretty well with all of them.
Which governor appointed you to the Board of Supervisors?
Governor Mike Foster.
And you've been on and off, but mostly on, for the last 20 years, and there have been some interesting times of late. Got a new athletic director. That came out of nowhere. You're pleased with the outcome?
Yes, I'm pleased with the person that we have. I'm not really crazy about the procedure that was used to get to that point, but Scott Woodward is the new athletic director, and he's got all sorts of connections. When I was chairman of the board at LSU in 2001, Scott was here with Mark Emmert, who was chairman of the was chancellor of the Baton Rouge campus, and got to know him then, and he left and followed Mark to Washington, and he's been in other places. He's got lots of experience dealing with athletic departments, and but he's been at some schools that really had lots of resources, like Texas A&M. They have a much bigger financial base than LSU does.
Yeah, $13 billion endowment.
Yes, indeed.
LSU is working on its first billion.
Right.
Now, Tom on Blue Bonnet asks if the future for the president of the university is clouded.
I think possibly. You can look at what King Alexander has done. He's done a lot of good things. He's done a lot of controversial things. And it's kind of iffy right now. A change was made some years ago to make him president and chancellor of the system and of LSU, the Baton Rouge campus. So the Baton Rouge campus does not have a chancellor other than King, mm-hmm. and the other campuses do. And I don't know. It's a lot of political maneuvering going on right now, and I'm not sure how that's going to work out.
Hal in Monroe, listening online, asks if in your days at LSU, did you have to shave your head when you enrolled? Well, you were an ROTC, I assume. It was mandatory.
You
shaved your head.
Shaved my head, wore a beanie, and it had Dog Anderson on it. And we drilled and marched, and at the first ball game, we had to wear pajamas for the first half of the first home game. And at halftime, we could take the pajamas off and get rid of the beanie, but I kept mine. And it was quite different back then.
Some would say maybe we should go back to that.
It was an interesting time.
It was mandatory for every male.
Right.
To be in ROTC.
You had a choice. You either went Army or Air Force, and that was the only choice you had.
Which was your choice?
I went Army. Oh. And it was at the time that the Vietnam War was at a height, and mm-hmm. We had the draft lottery, the first one. I was in that, and they drew birth dates out
to
determine who was drafted in what order. And I think that was the only drawing that I've ever won in my life. My number was 336. I had a good friend that was drawn seven. His birthday was seven. He went to Vietnam, stayed there for 11 months, and got killed right before he was going to come home. But it was a different time. But back then, you had so many hours to get a degree. And if you didn't finish a fourth of those hours each year, you lost your ability to stay in college, and you were sent on a paid vacation to Vietnam.
As I look around the room here, I see people of all ages, generations. Farming is quite often a family business. How's it working for younger people? Are they carrying on the tradition in our state?
It is. It's more difficult. You've got generations of farmers. In fact, we have a program today that recognizes centennial farms, farms that have been in business for over 100 years. And it's a bunch of them. It's more than you would think. And it's harder for young farmers to get into business unless they're in a line of inheriting part of that operation because of the cost of land, cost of equipment. The exposure that you have to get into business is tremendous. But we have about 100 young farmers that are part of our organization that in that program, and they're very enthusiastic. They're all working on different types of agriculture, and we're really pleased with what we see as far as the next generations of farmers.
And I think if people were looking at the room and were here for the duration of the convention, they might be surprised at the number of women who are involved.
Oh, yes, indeed. We have many members in the Young Farm and Rancher program that are female that run their operations and on through after that, after they get older and not involved with that program anymore. But it's many women that are involved with actual operation of the farm. They keep the books, they run the farm, they manage the labor, and it's some of them do them by themselves and some with their spouse.
All right, here's a question, and it comes from Lafayette, but it involves LSU. This is Tom in Lafayette asking why Pistol Pete Maravich isn't in the LSU Athletic Hall of Fame. Your former classmate, the leading scorer in the history of college basketball, is not in the LSU Athletic Hall of Fame.
Well, there are a few restrictions that are there, and one is Pete didn't graduate. Pete left before he finished his degree.
There have been exceptions.
There have been exceptions. Pete is one that should be an exception to that. I visited with his wife, Jackie, back at a basketball game last season, and Pete was really outstanding. He was amazing. He was so far ahead of his time with his abilities, and it was just a shame that he had a heart problem, didn't know about it, and died doing pickup basketball.
And tomorrow would have been his 72nd birthday. Still be a relatively young man by today's standards.
Yes,
died
indeed.
At 40.
Same age
but
as I am.
3,667 points, still a record.
Without a three-point.
And no shot clock.
And no shot clock. And he couldn't play but 3 years.
That's
right. He couldn't play as a freshman.
Mm-hmm.
With 4 years and a three-point line, gosh, it's no telling
well,
where that
number
would
be. Well, he still has a record despite those impediments, as you note, and he averaged 44.2 points per game. You don't see that anymore. And for anybody who was there, as you were, I mean, you were in the same class. He was in ROTC, by the way.
Yes, he was.
And had to shave his head, too.
He did.
But he left quite an indelible mark.
He did, and he had a unique dress about him. He was very superstitious, so he wore the same socks all the time.
Every game.
Every game. He washed them, I hope, but they were ragged as they could be, and they floppy around his ankles and stuff, but he was superstitious enough that he didn't mind that. He wore them anyway.
Well, I mentioned 137,000 members, and this hotel is full of people representing the Farm Bureau. What generally do people take away from an event of this kind?
Well, each one of them have a different interest when they're down here. Some are interested in the Ag in the Classroom program, some the Young Farmer and Rancher program, some of the youth programs that we have with speaking and other things that they do. So it's not just one thing that they gather and gain from being here, but we try to do something to have an interest for everybody.
Well, thank you, Ronnie Anderson, and he has been head of the Farm Bureau Federation for 30 years and is still going and still looks quite spry, so on to 40 for Ronnie Anderson, and we do want to note that the Farm Bureau Federation is an underwriter for WRKF. And signature support for Talk Louisiana comes from Brian Lowe Financial. For Matt Doyle back home and Don Molino here, I'm Jim Inkster. Thank you for listening and stay tuned.